You can get it done. What's more, you gotta get it done.
There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go.
Want a piece of that championship? Put it in here.
Hey, guys, where else would you rather be?
Welcome in to Hour 2 of Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson on 105.3 The Bear. Join the conversation now on the Baker Team Hotline, 540-731-1053, or text Rick and the show at 744-2990. And now your host, the Big Dog, Rick Watson.
Here on the finally Friday edition, the Baker Team Hotline, 731-1053, text line 744-2990.
Oh, wow, man.
Jen and Mike Ashley in hour three.
What do you think the teacher's going to look like this year?
Always great to hear people that are chiming in and say, man, oh, man, I love Friday mornings. You've raised my energy level up about 10 times what it normally is. That's great. That's the whole point. Yeah, I've been rocking out this morning, haven't we?
I think of all the education that I missed, but that my homework was never quite.
Appreciate, by the way, yesterday we had our general manager, Paul Johnson, in. And we appreciate, first of all, Paul, with the explanation of what went on with the contract negotiations with the new marketing group over at Virginia Tech that decided not to renew with the Bear. And so I've had a lot of people ask. I don't know. I have not heard much of anything. I've reached out to many of my colleagues, and right now everybody's playing dumb. If they're not being if they're being honest, then no one has been contacted. I don't know what the plans are for the being able to hear the Tech games locally. I have no idea. But I know just about everybody in the Roanoke region, Lynchburg region, I know the owners of the stations up here. I mean, everyone's saying that no one has been contacted, but you know, somebody might be kind of fibbing until an announcement is made, but we'll see. We shall see what happens. It's nice, isn't it, to see the NFL lose. They lose, and they lost yesterday, not as much as they could have lost. As a jury in the U.S. District Court ordered the NFL to pay $4.7 billion in damages Thursday after ruling that the league violated antitrust laws in distributing out-of-market Sunday afternoon games on a premium subscription service. The $4.7 billion in damages to the residential class and $96 million in damages to the commercial class. Since damages can be tripled under federal antitrust laws, the NFL could end up being liable for nearly $15 billion. The lawsuit covered 2.4 million residential subscribers. Hey, I'm one of those 48,000 businesses who paid for the package of out-of-market games from 2011 to 2022 on DirecTV. That would be me. The lawsuit claimed that the league broke antitrust laws by selling its package of Sunday games at an inflated price. Yeah. Subscribers also say the league restricted competition by offering Sunday ticket only on a satellite provider at the time. NFL is saying it's going to appeal. And it's nice to see that their greed and their lack of consideration for their fans and customers caught up to them. This is a nice, rare loss for Roger Goodell and the Shield. They need some humbling. If the NFL does end up paying these damages. It could cost each of the teams nearly $450 million each. Roger Goodell was amongst those who gave testimony, and Jerry Jones. There's a couple of straight-up guys. This is a win for the consumer. Of course, they took it off of DirecTV, and they gave it to YouTube, which is why I'm now a YouTube subscriber. But the runaway freight train that is the NFL gets derailed, at least on a minor scale for them. Not sure that's going to affect their bottom line too much over the years, but it will. Michigan State announced yesterday that they have renewed their rivalry with Notre Dame in 26 and 27. I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up. The Irish will host the Spartans in South Bend in 2026, then Notre Dame will travel to Michigan State in 2027. Of course, this game fell off of the schedule. And I bring this up because I was talking earlier in the week about the power that Notre Dame wields throughout college sports. And you see some of the comments from the Michigan State folks. This is the highlight game of our schedule, other than our state rival Michigan. Some of the bigger games in the Big Ten, losing Notre Dame, well, we won't get into it, but cost us a lot of revenue and credibility. It's great to have them back starting in 2026. Now, that tells you again, just highlights once again what it means to have even the team on its schedule. It's crazy, man. And I'm standing by it. Standing by the fact that Notre Dame is a more powerful entity on its own than the SEC and the Big Ten. I'm going to stand by that. But again, here they are controlling their schedule, right? Well, it's not an alliance. Sorry. Greg Sankey said it wasn't. So it can't be an alliance. So we have to believe Greg Sankey.
It's science.
I wish throughout all these five games per year that Notre Dame plays in the ACC, I wish that it worked out they played Tech more. Doesn't seem like that game comes around very often. I know they have to rotate it because everybody has to play Notre Dame. But it feels like that game doesn't come around as often as it should. So, a couple weeks ago, Wayne had sent a note about where Virginia Tech's going to rank. Now, he's going to have Phil Steele on with us here very soon. And he's got Virginia Tech number 17, as Wayne had said then, although there was some counter reporting at the time. And the brief little blurb, by the way, does two full pages of every element of every team. Offense, defense, depth chart, special teams, coaching, I mean, you name it. But he always puts a little sentence or two beside his top 25. He says, once quarterback Kyron Drones took over VT's fortunes, changed the way they went, 5-2, they're number two on their experience chart. We talk about everybody coming back, and he talks about the things we've talked about. They avoid Florida State, SMU, and NC State. He looks at these things that are very important, and it's who you also don't play. It's not necessarily who you play, but who you don't play. In Tech, again, yes, they have a lot of experience, but everybody's excited. I think even more than that, and I've said this a lot, is how this schedule is going to fall in 2024. This is why, for me, anything less than 9 wins is going to be a major disappointment. And Phil Steele will get into it when we have him on the show here in the next couple, 3 weeks. The schedule in itself is not good in terms of being week in and week out very enticing. I mean, you know, let's just be honest. You're going to go through the first month of the season, this non-conference schedule, and you're going to be engaged because you want Tech to win. But you're not going to sit around and really get fired up each and every week for these opponents that are going to show up in the non-conference. I mean, sorry, but if you're going to play an SEC team, anybody else might stir that up other than the team Tech's actually playing, which is Vanderbilt. Marshall doesn't do it. The team out of West Virginia they should be playing, well, that would be the Mountaineers. Then that would stir up everything. But nah, we don't want to do that. We're going to create some lame excuse some years ago about the fan bases, and we're going to have just not to play that game every year. Shame on the administrations at both West Virginia and Virginia Tech. Shame, shame, shame. Then you go to Old Dominion, a rivalry that, well, isn't, because I don't know any Tech fan who cares about playing Old Dominion other than they're scared to death to go to Norfolk after what's happened the last two times. That game doesn't arouse anything. It's a no-win thing. Tech is supposed to win the game. And when they win it, okay, they were supposed to. If they lose it, which they've done twice, then uh-oh, how do we bounce back from this? And in most cases, they haven't. And then you bring Rutgers in, and okay. But again, if you're going to play somebody out of the Big Ten, not even saying it has to be an Ohio State or a Michigan or Nebraska or Purdue, whomever. Played Purdue last year. But it's Rutgers. How about Maryland? I mean, you think about what you could do, what you could subtly have worked out for Virginia Tech's schedule. Instead of Vanderbilt, let's say they travel to Starkville to take on the Bulldogs of Mississippi State. Can't really get out of the Old Dominion thing, but imagine if that were Liberty instead. And then, as I mentioned, imagine if Marshall wasn't Marshall, but it was West Virginia. And imagine if Rutgers was Maryland. Then you would have a schedule that everyone would be falling all over themselves about getting ready for ACC play. Now, obviously, Tech would never do that because that would be too difficult of a slate. But I'm telling you, you would enjoy that, though, wouldn't you, Tech fan? Wouldn't you? You would enjoy that. I mean, there'd be some salivating at the possibilities there. Imagine if it were a Mississippi State, Liberty, West Virginia, and then Maryland schedule. You got two regional rivalries, actually three rivalries there. But nah, that's not the case. So if Phil still has Tech 17, I think that should make people, even the biggest doubters, pay attention, because Phil doesn't mess around. He's not playing favorites with anybody. He has no rooting interest with anyone. If he's seeing the same things that I've been talking about here on the show for the last several months, then it tells you that I'm not just blowing in the wind here. All the things are lining up for this to be a very, very strong season for this team, barring injuries to key positions. There will be injuries, but can you avoid it happening to the key positions? As Bill Roth was talking about on Wednesday during the Roth Report, all it takes is one snap, and all of a sudden Colin Schley could be the most important player on that entire roster, right? That's how quickly it changes from who's the backup quarterback? Oh, okay, kind of forgot. We haven't seen him. To, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do now? Aaron Drones is hurt. Oh, that's right. It's the kid from UCLA. Let's see how he can handle all this. And that's all it takes for any team. That's true of any program in the country, no matter what your expectations are. I mean, for Florida State, it didn't happen until the end of the year last year. What happened to their expectations when they lost Jordan Travis? Well, they lost that on the playoff. Allegedly, that's the reason why. Tougher and tougher in today's both college and, of course, the NFL to keep those quarterbacks upright for the entire season, and that's what's going to be the key. I think Kyron Drones is going to absolutely explode this year. I really do. Now, whether that means he's going to end up an all-ACC quarterback and is actually mentioned in the Heisman Trophy, I don't know. That's what Dwight Vick thinks, but everything just seems to make sense in terms of his continued development. But We'll have Phil on, and we'll talk about all these things. I chuckled as I was standing in the drugstore getting my prescription filled, looking at the like Athlon and Lindy's preview and how small that it is in comparison to what Phil Steele provides. I'm like, really? You're going to spend money on this? Nah, I think I'll wait. We'll be back. More of our number two after this.
Big Dog Sports Talk.
Ricky Bussell, head football coach at University of Louisiana Lafayette, Raging Cajun. We're all listening to Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson.
25 minutes past the hour. You're on the finally Friday edition. Hope everybody's doing okay. Jen and Mike Ashley in hour number three, 731-1053 is the Baker Team hotline. Text line 744-2990. Something called College Football Network. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but I was just looking. They have the ACC schedules ranked. Terms of strength of schedule for the ACC. And they have Tech 14th out of 17. I guess a couple of the reasons SMU and NC State are also, well, they have good players, but are predicted to have big years is the fact that SMU has the easiest schedule, 17th, and then NC State is 16th. How about that? Georgia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, Wake, Stanford, your top five toughest, your five weakest, Carolina, Virginia Tech, Pitt, NC State, SMU. So there you go. There you go. So it falls in line with everything we've said here on the show. You're welcome. Bronny James gets drafted last night by the Lakers because nobody was going to take him because he's not good. He's not an NBA player. He wasn't good in college. What, he averaged 4 points? But because LeBron willed it to happen, his son is now a Laker. And now, of course, ESPN is just, they can't wait. They're falling all over it. I mean, this is exactly what they wanted, right? They had to have this. My Lord. There was no chance anybody else was going to draft him but the Lakers. I love the fact that ESPN actually had people breaking this thing down like, oh, yeah, let's see how he fits in. I mean, he's a G League level player. Is what he is. And this is one of those situations where it's not only nepotism, it shows you how weak the current leadership in Los Angeles really is. Everybody trying to defend it. But then again, you got to keep in mind too, now, a lot of this isn't his fault. Remember, he had the cardiac arrest when he was a freshman, and I think that has probably slowed down his development. And I feel bad for the kid that a youngster like that had to go through that. What is he, 18 years old, and he has a cardiac arrest? He has a major heart issue. So this isn't criticizing him based on that, right? This is more, it's not even on him. It's not even on him. It's more, yeah, Wayne, you're right. They can't cut him, right? They can send him down, keep him under contract, and send him to the G League, which is probably what they'll do, but at some point. But Yeah, you can't cut him. He's going to be there. He's going to be part of it. But I just, I'm glad I'm not a Lakers fan. We have to take a break. We're going to come back. Mike Ashley's a huge Lakers fan. I got to get into this. I just, it's one of those things where make it make sense with how far the Lakers have fallen over here over the last couple of weeks. We're halfway home on the Finally Friday edition. Jen and Mike Ashley leading off our Power Hour coming up. We'll discuss this and much more when we come back.
It's the Big Dog on the Bear.
Minutes past the hour. Hope you're well wherever you might be here on this Finally Friday edition. The Baker Team Hotline, 731-1053. Text line 744-2990. Anything that might be on your mind. Jennifer and Mike Ashley in hour number three. To finish up another week here on the program, finishing up our first month here on 105.3 The Bear. All right, the Lakers. I guess you could go through every sport. After you're done, you have the Lakers in your top 10 of all-time American professional sports franchises, right? Certainly, they're either number 2 or 1A with the Boston Celtics in the NBA. Talking about iconic and championship caliber, I mean, you have to put the Knicks up there. But the Lakers are the Lakers. And they probably are more of a Cowboys type of model in popularity than even the Celtics, who just won their 18th straight title. I mean, the Celtics are the cream of the crop in the NBA, but I don't know if they have that national pull anymore. But being out there in Los Angeles, the second largest media market, everything's under more scrutiny. But I just marvel at where we are and reading some articles about this organization. And, you know, people are taking their shots out there in the Los Angeles sports media, and I don't blame them. Bill Plaschke, in particular, has been a very vocal critic as of late, the Hall of Fame writer. Not as good as our own Hall of Famer, David Teal, but still, nonetheless. And it is amazing, isn't it, that you have a guy like Magic Johnson who's leading this ownership group, arguably the greatest player along with Kareem to ever don the purple and gold, or actually it's form blue, but it's purple. They hire a GM with virtually no experience. They hire a head coach with absolutely zero experience, who now has this allegation against him while he was at Duke. And everyone in the league, and I looked at some of these folks, nobody even had Bronny James on their draft board. And usually draft boards rank, you know, the NBA, it's only two rounds. I'm still trying to figure out how this went from when there was a lot less teams, I believe it was a 7-round draft, and now that there's a lot more teams and it's only a 2-round draft. But I digress. Nobody, if you had 100 players ranked, had him up. He's just not a very, he hasn't been a very good player. And again, I think a lot of it is he's just trying to get back to being a normal human being after having cardiac arrest. I mean, the kid almost died. So again, this isn't really focused and critical on the young man. It's just everything the Lakers are doing to placate LeBron as he's going to be in his 40s. And this whole J.J. Redick situation, right? He does a podcast with J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick's the coach. I want to go out and play with my son. So they're going to do that. Now, the other side of the argument is this. We want to take both sides of it. He is LeBron James. He is, you know, regardless of what you think of him, he is one of the most influential athletes over the last 20 years. I think people still across the world, probably when you hear NBA, American player, you're going to throw out LeBron James. He's a brand. He's a worldwide icon. He's that guy. So from a pure, I don't know if marketing is even the right word, but from a pure just, maybe it is just marketing. Marketing point of view, the Lakers allowed this to happen because LeBron was pushing for it. Now, I also think that they were embarrassed nationally with the whole Dan Hurley pursuit. If you read any follow-up about that, they really thought this was a done deal. Jerry West passes away. Another black mark against the organization. The Celtics win the record 18th championship. And the guy they thought they were going to be able to reel in pretty easily, Dan Hurley, went out there. And what you read is there was a lot more than just his wife. You know, everybody tried to and that was probably the Laker people putting it out there. But Dan Hurley said he never once got a vibe once he got in the building that this was going to be a place he wanted to go. How about that? The Los Angeles Lakers is a place that you didn't want to go because of the vibe in the building. But I guess it's not dissimilar to what Jerry Jones has created for the richest team in all the NFL. In terms of what it's worth, its value if it were to be sold. The Dallas Cowboys. I think it's a difficult place, as Mike McCarthy finds out year in and year out, post-Jimmy Johnson era, to go in there and feel great about that culture. And you're talking about, wow, easily one of the top two or three iconic organizations in the NFL. And you think about that, they didn't come around to 1960, the Cowboys. All right? Yet here they are. So you have two storied franchises, very similar. Is it ownership? I don't know what it is. The culture? Is it the Lakers caving to the West Coast media and the mindset out there? I don't know. I just know that it's not a really good thing. That's all I know. And here they are now taking Bronny James. And we'll see how it works out. Look, I don't wish the kid any ill will. Like I said, I want him to stay healthy. He's got more money. He's never going to want for money. I mean, his dad's a billionaire. How motivated is he going to be to try to be a good player? I don't know the answer to that. But I see now all this together. Now I completely understand why Dan Hurley felt the way he did, that he could just so easily go back. And just almost brush off the whole experience. I don't know if even more money, reading what I've read, I don't know if reading more money even, or getting more money offered would have changed his mind. He's got a lot of money. He's got a nice raise, everything at UConn. When you're the top coach in your profession. College Football Network, by the way, there's not much dancing around. They don't change a lot. I was just looking. Never heard of this site before, so I don't know if it has any credibility. Maybe you have. I don't know. Clemson, Florida State, Miami, 9.5 wins. Not unlike other things we've seen. Tech at 7.5. I believe they just copied and pasted this from the Vegas line. It doesn't look like there's anything original here. You realize now this weekend's going to take us through the end of June. And when you get into July, training camps, you're only going to have 1 month away before everything starts to all of a sudden become real when practice starts. College Football News goes through and they make predictions on all these things. Every team in the ACC, they go through after spring ball and tell you whether that team's going to win or lose its games. And we've had folks on from College Football News before. Good folks. They work hard to try to cover college football as, you know, honestly as possible. Here's what College Football News, when they went through the tech schedule, this is what they came up with. August 31st at Vanderbilt, a win. September 7th at against Marshall, a win. September 14th at Old Dominion, a win. September 21st against Rutgers, a win. So, just like we have told you, College Football News also has Virginia Tech going 4-0 in its non-conference. And if you go 4-0 in the first month, you're thinking, oh, the sky's the limit. Here's where it all changes, because they start off Tech at 4-0, and then they have them finishing 3-5. I'm going to bookmark this. They've got them losing at Miami on September 27th. Then they've got the follow-up. They've got them losing out in Palo Alto at the farm to Stanford. Really? Then they have the open date on the 12th. They have them beating BC on the 17th, that Thursday night. They then have Tech, and this is what, the second or third time I've seen that Georgia Tech is being predicted to beat Virginia Tech in Lane Stadium on the 26th. November 2nd at Syracuse, a win. They have that one a win, and that's the one that I think is kind of sketchy. Losing to Clemson, second open date on the 16th, losing at Duke, and then beating Virginia. So College Football News has Tech going 7-5. Whew. Your thoughts? They have Virginia with 4 wins, beating Richmond, winning at Coastal, beating BC, and beating SMU on the 23rd. Mm-hmm. Really? Everybody who's hot on SMU, they've got SMU going 4-8. I don't think that's going to be the case. And they have them starting out 3-0. This is where I think you can take this with a grain of salt. They have SMU starting out 3-0 and then winning just one of their final 9 games. They have Pitt going 7-5. North Carolina 8-4. And this is College Football News. NC State 8-4. Miami 9-3. Miami losing at Florida, at Cal, and then at Georgia Tech. Louisville 8-4. Georgia Tech 6-6. Florida State 10-2. Who else am I leaving out here? Clemson 10-2. Okay. All righty then. Tech 7-5. Tech finishing the final 2 months of the season at 3-5. Man. Okay, I mean, everybody has a right to their opinion. Right? I mean, have an opinion about it. I get it. I mean, I don't know, but that just seems very low. And the whole SMU thing makes no sense to me. And that's the second time I've seen it swapped out how I think it's going to go. Georgia Tech, they think, is going to come in the lane and win. Then they have Tech going up to the Dome in New York and winning. If anything, I think that's going to be reversed. Because I have minimum 9-3, they have 7-5. But it just shows you the difference, and there's a lot of people still not sold. And it does go back to what Andy Bitter said. I've realized this, and he's exactly right. If you look last year, Tech 7 wins, who did they actually beat that was good? And I think that's what, if people are waiting and hesitating and holding back, I think that's the main element of it. It's not like they broke through against these dynamic teams. They didn't beat any of the good teams in the league. So maybe that's the only thing I can think of. Because a lot of times you'll see in year three, right, programs that are on the up and up, clearly they'll jump all over, right? They'll say, oh, watch out. Here we go. Here we go. Average Joe says, the people that wrote that crap must be the same people that did Biden's debate prep last night. Thanks, Joe. I didn't watch any of that. I'm glad I didn't, because all I've seen is people just like creating all these memes out of it. Wow. Just wow. But in any event, that's college football news and what they're expecting to happen. 7-5 for Tech. 4 wins for SMU. Okay. We're coming back to wrap up hour two. Remind you what's ahead in the Power Hour when we return.
Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson.
Hi, this is Bob Toledo, the head football coach at UCLA. You're listening to Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson.
Edward Van Halen on the guitar, by the way. You better run, you better do what you can. Finishing up our second session of three in the Power Hour, Jen the Gamecock Girl and Mike Ashley. Seven 3 1 1 0 5 3. That's the Baker Team Hotline. 744-2990. Pete writes in, man, College Football News is a publication that I bookmarked and I keep, but man, after hearing those predictions, I don't know how I can. Yeah, what surprises you more? 7-5 for Tech, Virginia getting 4 wins. In other words, they're saying Virginia is going to have the same record as SMU. Because they had them beating SMU. They don't like SMU at all. I don't see Virginia winning at Coastal. They have them winning that game. Let's see how they do against Richmond on August 31st. Let's see how they handle the Spiders. Then we'll worry about the rest of it. And the thing you don't take into account, I mean, let's say they are correct, like I have predicted as well, and Virginia Tech is 4-0 in the non-conference. Man, the momentum and the confidence. And again, all this is clearly assuming and hoping that it's injury-free. So, but man, you're in a different mindset, a different place. If you're 4-0 and you go into Miami on the 27th, unbeaten, I mean, they got Miami going into that game 3-1. Okay, Okay. I think Phil likes Miami, too. I'm going to – when we have him on, there's so many things. That's why we got to get him on multiple times. But I just got to – I got to ask him about why every year – I'm not saying he has, but why every year we have to put up with this whole Miami expectation. And I'm sorry, I just – for Florida State, I'm just not sold on DJ Uiagalelei. That's just – I mean, this guy washed out at Clemson and couldn't be out a freshman. And he was, you know, he was okay at Oregon State. Now he's coming in to replace Jordan Travis, and everybody's acting like this is going to be the second coming of Michael Vick. Sam Howell's now the Mike Vick of the ACC. I mean, it just feels like that's a lot of assumption there that he's going to be okay. I don't see it, but what do I know? All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Hour three with Jen and Mike Ashley. Jen, the Gamecock Girl, leads it off here on the finally Friday edition.